It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is, it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is your wrestling nostalgia night. It's time to go back in time. It's time to go back to yesteryear. To a time that was simpler. A time that was viewed as really the golden era of WWE. And tonight, we are taking a look at Survivor Series 2001, Team Alliance versus Team WWF, winner take all. And I'm going to get into all of what led up to this, the heel turns, the returns. A lot went into this pay-per-view, so I'm going to give you guys a bit of a history lesson or just a recap if you may have forgotten about this. And I know it's certainly been a while since I've taken a look at this match on a detailed level, and it's, my God, it's almost been 20 years. And that's insane that this match took place almost 20 years ago. 19 years ago, it'll be this November, but close enough. And yes, I've got some audio to share, not just from the pay-per-view itself, but also from a couple of Raws that really led up to this, and some really big moments that created this pay-per-view, that led to this moment, this winner-take-all, this definitive end of the WCW and WWF feud. And yeah, you can throw ECW in there as well. Like they created the Alliance, which was really a WCW-ECW conglomerate. So we're going to get into that, and it's an exciting time to jump into, because I think it's one of the more well-viewed parts in time frames of WWE, as it was a who's who roster. I mean, think about who's on the roster here. You have, obviously, Stone Cold Steve Austin still leading the pack. You have The Rock. You have Booker T. You have Rob Van Dam. You have Kurt Angle. You have Triple H. You have Chris Jericho. And the list goes on. Big Show, Kane, Taker. And it really was a who's who roster. And we were still a year away from getting Hogan, Nash, and Scott Hall, as they wouldn't be in WWF for another year, as they were just collecting checks, sitting at home with Time Warner paying off their contracts. And so outside of those three big names, you had everyone else. And yeah, Goldberg was still a couple of years away as well. He didn't come in until, I believe it was 03, 04, 03, I believe, as he immediately began a program with The Rock and then ended with Brock Lesnar. And so while we didn't have those big names, we still had a very, very solid WCW roster, ECW roster as well. So it was just an awesome time, and we're going to get to that, and all the, again, huge heel turns and returns, like The Rock coming back, and who's he going to side with. I remember that like it was freaking yesterday, and so I'm going to get to that in a second, but first, this is the WWE Podcast, where we do wrestling nostalgia every single week. We bring you AEW, NXT reviews, Raw, SmackDown, weekend reviews, and everything in between. So we really we cover everything that we can. And I have some people angry at me, and I don't know why, right? I mean, you figure that this wouldn't be exactly on the top of their priority list of issues in their lives, but people who think I should change my name because we cover AEW. Really? Yeah. Just to appease you, let me make sure that I go ahead and just completely scrap everything that I've done, and just, you know, get rid of my logo, get rid of my website, just throw that domain up for grabs. all because somebody thinks, and really, it's been a few people who think that just because we cover AEW here that, oh, we're not truly a WWE podcast. Well, guess what? Here's the thing. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. This is my show, and we will cover whatever wrestling shows we want to. And I'll leave it at that. How about that? If you like the show, great. If you don't, move on. I mean, it's as simple as that, right? It's as simple as that. So anyway, for those that are interested in AEW, we do cover AEW here because I think it's smart too. Why would we not want to cover AEW? Why would we not want to cover it? We've got 6 of the 7 shows dedicated to WWE products. Why would we not want to cover the hottest rising new wrestling promotion? It's just stupid not to if you're trying to grow listeners. So, I mean, it's just business 101. Anyway, if you guys want to tweet at me anytime, you can do so at the WWE Podcast on Twitter. And I'm not just the WWE Podcast on Twitter. There's underscores in between each word. So I've been giving somebody free follows, I'm sure, for quite a while. I mean, there is somebody else that just has no underscores, but it was taken. So just a quick little tidbit there. If you guys also want to rate and review me, you can do so on Apple Podcasts, anywhere the podcasts are available. I would really appreciate it. Well, even if you hate the show and people think that they're damaging me by giving me a bad review, hey, guess what? Surprise. Even if you give me a 1-star review, it still helps out in the number of reviews, which ultimately raises me in the ranking. So really, joke's on you. But if you want to leave a positive review, which I encourage you to do, certainly do so at any podcast app you have that allows for ratings and reviews. I know some do, some don't. You can also get a completely ad-free experience of the show on patreon.com/WWE podcast. If you want no ads and you're tired of them and you're like, and I know, I understand. And I get complaints about it all the time that this show has so many ads, blah, blah, blah. But look, you know, who wouldn't want to monetize their show when they have the opportunity? It's just silly not to. And I can give you an ad-free experience for just $1 for the entire library. I mean, it's a pretty damn good value. Head on over to WWE Podcast on Patreon. So those are just a couple of tidbits that I like to run through every time to let you guys know. And as WrestleMania approaches, I will be doing obviously a lot more shows. And the post shows for 2 days of WrestleMania, because WrestleMania is just too damn big this year for one night. And it makes you wonder, I thought about this earlier today, if this was one night, how long would the show be? And would WWE make it a 7-hour show? Or would they cut back, given there's no audience? You know, so I'd love to see somebody create or really just look at the timeline. Look at what your first day time is. Look at what the second day time is. Total it up. Is WWE, if you totaled that up, going to create a longer show? They just wanted to split it over 2 days? And, you know, you wonder if this is going to be like 5 and 5. I don't know. But so I don't know if you guys have heard, too. The WWE Performance Center is closed as of March 26th. So WWE, knowing this, is taping WrestleMania right now. Right now. And they're also taping it tomorrow. And as of tomorrow, I believe close of business tomorrow. At the end of the day, they're being forced to shut down. Per the city ordinance of Orlando. So no worries, though. WrestleMania is still going to be taped. They still have, they still are able to get in what they need to get in and get the storylines they need to get in and all that kind of stuff. So WrestleMania is already going to be decided as of tomorrow. And it's already been done and over with. So there's no live WrestleMania. It's going to be already pre-taped. And you wonder, though, what's happening after that. Because after WrestleMania, I don't know how many weeks of television they've been able to tape. So we may have a pause of a few weeks where there's just no new content because WWE can't go anywhere. If they can't perform in their own performance center, if they can't tape there, even with no fans, their hands may be tied in creating original content. They truly may be strapped where they, after WrestleMania, kind of take a pause and reset. And they may be forced to. And I'm okay with that. You know, I really am okay with if WWE goes through with this and we're able to see WrestleMania and as awkward it's going to be and really just kind of probably depressing at times as it's going to be to see no fans in the building, because they add so much energy to the live experience and really the television experience. How fans react if there's no content after that, right? If WWE decides to, well, not really decide, if they are forced to shut up, close shop, and there's no content for a few weeks, would you be okay with that? How do you guys feel if we take a break for maybe a month and then WWE comes back stronger than ever? You know, maybe WWE does reruns, or they do promo packages, or they do just something to keep you reminded of what happened at Mania, to build up for a month. And then when the live events reopen with audiences there, you're more pumped than ever. Yes, we're missing out on the crazy wild Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania. That is a damn shame. It's a crime. It's a crime. That is my favorite show of the year as far as Raws go. So, we're missing out on that. But I'm willing to sacrifice no new content for a month. Again, month is just a number I'm pulling out of the air. If they're going to come back stronger than ever and they're able to keep fans engaged for a month or so, until they say, hey, we're returning live to you on May 15th, something like that. So how do you guys feel about that? I'm curious. Do you, or are you okay if WWE takes a break, not of their own accord, but because they're forced to, after WrestleMania, and then it's like a cliffhanger at the end of a season? If you're watching a Netflix series, you get this big, 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 big cliffhanger, and then you're forced to wait. I mean, usually when you're watching any normal show on Netflix or on cable TV, you're forced to wait from, May until September. Once your show ends in May, my God, you have like 4 months until your show returns and you get to find out. So if you think of it like that, for the first time ever, if WWE is forced to go with that format, I think it could be a good thing, because it builds anticipation. It's that pent up frustration. It's that time for fans, for the first time ever, to take a breath from the WWE product and say, hey, WWE did WrestleMania. They did what they could with no audience, but this is the date when we know they're coming back. And how much of a build would that have? And you build that return show in front of a live audience like it's WrestleMania part two, right? You build it like it is the second coming of Christ. Because I think that would pop a huge rating if you have big names. Again, this is assuming things come back on in mid-May. Because no way WWE, there's no way WWE has been able to film weeks and weeks and weeks of Raws and SmackDowns in the empty Arena Performance Center prior to the shutdown tomorrow. It's just not going to happen. And get WrestleMania done? No, I don't think so. So, I think that, with all that being said, you could build the final return to the fans. We're performing in front of a live audience. The restrictions have been lifted, and we can now come to you live. And imagine the crowd on that night. Imagine the build to that night. Imagine the anticipation. If you remind fans, keep them engaged of what happened at WrestleMania, and that we're going to be finally back in front of a live crowd. I'm excited just thinking about it. But I think it's an option that we may all have to deal with. It's a reality we may all have to deal with. And I'm okay with it. I've come to peace with it. Because I think the anticipation, building to the anticipation of that night, getting back to our normal lives, would be absolutely off the chain, off the page. I really do. So let me know what you guys think of that. Because it's not an option WWE would want to do. They would love to continue to keep pumping out original content, but they may be forced to. Their hand is going to be forced very soon if the Performance Center is shut down and they can't go anywhere. What are they going to do, right? Cut live promos via Skype to each other? I mean, let's be honest. So, okay, let's get to the wrestling nostalgia. That's why you're here. And I'm not going to get too much fluff into this show. I'm going to get right to it. I know you guys don't like, well, some of you don't like when I just kind of drone on about things that aren't about wrestling nostalgia, considering that's the name of the show. So let's go back here to 2001. 2001 was a just a crazy year in WWE. And it is a year in which we saw Stone Cold Steve Austin turn heel at WrestleMania 17 in front of the Houston audience to defeat The Rock for the WWF Championship, align himself with Vince McMahon. And he proceeds to give him hugs and sing to Vince McMahon via guitar and have Deborah make him cookies and all this stuff. And we get the two-man power trip with Triple H. So Triple H and Stone Cold go on a tear. Eventually, they get they meet their match with the Brothers of Destruction, Undertaker, and Kane. And I think that worked well to a degree. I don't think anybody really wanted to see Stone Cold heel at that point. I still didn't. It was uncomfortable. It didn't fit. I know what they were going for. But people loved Austin so much, they didn't want to see a heel Stone Cold. There was that strong of a connection. I didn't think it was getting stale, but apparently Stone Cold did. So that's promoted, or that propagated the heel turn. Nonetheless, this two-man power trip continues with Triple H and Austin. And then along comes WCW and ECW after WWF purchased them in March. So we get this this ECW-WCW invasion. And at this time, Stone Cold is still giving Vince McMahon hugs. He still is basically kissing his ass on a weekly basis. Still WWF champion. And when ECW and WCW seem to overrun WWF time and again, you have Vince pleading with Austin. I remember it as clear as day on SmackDown, pleading to have the old Stone Cold back. He wants the ass-kicking, don't take any you-know-what from anybody version of the character. He didn't want the version of the character that gives him hugs and bakes cookies. And you can go back, just type in SmackDown and look for this. It's Vince wants the old Stone Cold back. It's a great SmackDown, or a great segment anyway. So Austin says no. And then on the following Raw, WCW and ECW are overtaking WWF. And it's the Raw before the pay-per-view invasion that took place in July of that year. And WCW and ECW are beating the holy hell out of WWF. Stone Cold had been followed by a camera throughout the night of various bars and looking stern, kind of looking depressed, looking conflicted, not knowing what he's going to do. Eventually, Stone Cold is playing pool, watching what's going on Raw, and slams the cue stick on the billiard table in half. And then you see him storm out of the building. Out of the bar, the local bar, wherever he may be. So Stone Cold pulls up. He goes through several lines of defense. And, well, we get, I believe, one of the best moments in Raw history in Stone Cold Steve Austin returning to Raw as the old Stone Cold to save WWF from ECW and WCW. Let's take a listen to the reaction. It gives me goosebumps. I still watch this clip to this day because it's wrestling at its damn best.
Stone Cold has stepped to the head of the line.
So we all get the old Stone Cold back, the man that we've been waiting for, the man that we missed for, 3 months, and we think we've got him back. And at Invasion, Stone Cold was leading Team WWF into Invasion as the team captain, so to speak. And so during the match, it looks like Kurt Angle has it won. And let's take a listen to what happens. So Stone Cold again turns heel, or attempts to, and we have a more vicious Stone Cold. He came out on Raw the next night and said he did it because he felt unappreciated and was a very authoritarian leader, a big bully as a leader of the Alliance. And again, I still think this was not a good attempt, or, well, it was a failed attempt again to get people to hate Austin. And I still didn't like it. I think that Austin was hard-headed on getting this to work, and people still did not accept it. You didn't hear a whole lot of boos. You just heard a whole lot of exhales, like people going, oh, no, we just want Stone Cold the babyface, right? That is what, at the heart, people loved. And by and large, his heel turn did not work. So Stone Cold becomes the leader of the Alliance and, again, ruled with an iron fist. Played kind of the coward at times, and overall, again, while it was successful at times and he got the reaction he wanted at times, it still did not, by and large, work very well. So while all this is happening, The Rock is off doing his movie. I believe it was the very first one he did, which is Scorpion King. And so we were all highly anticipating, when is The Rock going to come back? When are we going to see him? When do we see the Brahma Bull? Well, we got an answer on July 30th, 2001. And more importantly, the question that we all wanted to know, who is he going to side with? Team WWF or the Alliance? And during this segment, we had both Vince and Shane and Stephanie basically kissing The Rock's ass, trying to get him to side with their respective groups. So this is, it was a quite a long segment, so I'll just give you the end here. And this is important because it leads into the pay-per-view of Survivor Series 2001. So this will be our final stop, and then we'll get into the actual pay-per-view itself. But I wanted to give you guys a little bit of a backstory. Again, here we go. It's The Rock making his decision of where his loyalties lie.
Decision, okay? Listen to the voice of reason. Listen to the voice of experience. Give the people what they want.
The Rock has joined the Alliance.
Oh my God.
Live this moment, JR. Live this moment for the rest of your life.
I cannot believe this. This is the worst thing that could happen to the WWF.
People's champion!
So what a great moment here. I mean, we had The Rock, rock bottom Shane, rock bottom Vince, and you don't know where his loyalties lie. And then you get that the famous line by The Rock saying he's come back to the WWF. So, I mean, you couldn't have had it any other way. With Stone Cold on one side, you can't have The Rock on that same side. You got to have yin and yang, and that's what we got. So the battle lines were drawn here. The battle lines were drawn between the Alliance, headed by Stone Cold, and Team WWF, headed by The Rock. And it was tumultuous, and it led to months of feuding until we get to Survivor Series in November. And it all came to a head. Everything on the line. It was billed as their jobs were on the line. And in this match, and before I give you that, the actual match itself, I want to give you guys, because I like to do this, I think it's important to know what other matches were on the card of Survivor Series. And anytime I do a pay-per-view, just to give you some perspective of what else was on the card. Just Incredible, Lance Storm, and Raven defeated Albert, Scotty Tuhati, and Spike Dudley. Christian defeated Al Snow. This was an Alliance versus WWF themed pay-per-view. Every match was Alliance versus WWF. William Regal defeated Tajiri. And by the way, on a side note, and I would love to do a whole podcast on this, William Regal is one of the most underappreciated heels ever. Ever. He was damn brilliant. And, it's a shame that I'm just realizing this now of how good he was. He could fit in any era. William Regal is just a genius on the mic. His poise in the ring, everything. He screams heel and he's damn good at it. And I feel like, if he was put in today's product, he would be the top guy within a month. Heel-wise. So, that's neither here nor there. Maybe I'll do a whole show on William Regal. Edge defeated Test for the Intercontinental title. The Dudley Boys defeated the Hardy Boys for the WWF Tag Team titles. Test won by eliminating Billy Gunn in the Immunity Battle Royal. Trish Stratus defeated Ivory, Jazz, Jacqueline, Lita, and Mighty Molly in a six-pack challenge for the WWF Women's Championship. And then, we had Team WWF, which consisted of The Rock, Chris Jericho, The Undertaker, Kane, and Big Show against The Alliance. Stone Cold Steve Austin, Kurt Angle, Rob Van Dam, Booker T, and Shane McMahon in a winner-take-all 5-on-5 Survivor Series elimination match that went 45 minutes. Yeah, 45 minutes. This thing almost went as long as the Royal Rumble would go. Let me break this down here. The eliminations came as follows, for those that are interested in such things. The Big Show was eliminated by Shane McMahon via pinfall. Shane McMahon was eliminated by Chris Jericho. Kane was eliminated by Rob Van Dam. The Undertaker was eliminated by Kurt Angle. Booker T was eliminated by The Rock. RVD was eliminated by Chris Jericho. Kurt Angle was eliminated by The Rock. Chris Jericho was eliminated by Steve Austin. And then it came down to Stone Cold and The Rock. So for those that haven't seen it, I won't give it away, although at this point you probably aren't listening anyway. But I will give you the ending here. I think if you've seen this or you're a wrestling fan from the Attitude Era, you know where I'm going. But before I get to that outcome, rather than tell you, I'm going to let you listen, of course. But when you look at every single name I just mentioned, every single name, from Scotty Tuhati, Spike Dudley, Raven, Lance Storm, Justin Credible, Christian, I'm giving you guys the Alliance members here, Test, Billy, who do I have here? Ivory was part of the Alliance. Mighty Molly was part of the Alliance. Stacy Keibler was part of the Alliance. The Dudley Boys, part of the Alliance. William Regal. I'm just naming these names because the point is this pay-per-view was supposed to be the end-all be-all. And that whoever lost this was out of a job, and if WWF decided to hire them back themselves, they would. And when I just named every single guy that I just named, 95% of them maintain their jobs. And with, you know, rightfully so, you can't have a roster with that much talent from WCW just, you know, go by the wayside. You had to retain the majority of this talent. So, I mean, you look at this is just an all-star roster right now. And it's funny when you look back at these pay-per-views, you just took this roster for granted, didn't you? You just took it for granted. So that's what was on the line here. This was the blow-off. This was the final match for Team Alliance and Team WWF. So let me give you guys the finish of this, and then we'll reconvene and talk about it. So, Kurt Angle comes to the WWF's rescue. And I remember the next night on Raw that Kurt Angle was trying to appease to the audience and trying to say that he should be celebrated as a hero, the guy that single-handedly saved the organization. And that's where Stone Cold came up with the what thing. Well, he had come up with the what thing in the Alliance as the leader of the Alliance, but this is where his what shirt started coming out, really catching on. And this would be the last, I believe, the last pay-per-view in which Austin was fully heel, as he slowly transitioned here from leader of the Alliance and a double heel turn from Mania at 17, and then again at the Invasion pay-per-view, turning on WWF, to finally just kind of giving in, going, well, that didn't work. And he gave it a go for 6 months, 7 months almost, and just kind of waved the white flag at that point. And Kurt Angle would be the one to try to take the credit. And I remember Austin coming out and attacking Kurt Angle. And from there on, it was Austin as the babyface. And even though Kurt Angle saved the company, he was trying to make it all about himself, which is what made him heel, even though he did indeed screw Stone Cold and save the WWF. Even though he did that, it's how he presented it, how he went about letting people know about it. And that's what made him into the heel again. So I don't remember the details of how, even though Austin lost, how he was able to maintain employment. and, you know, to also kind of note on the commentary here, how great is Jim Ross, and how great are, I'll get the words right, Jim Ross and Paul Heyman together on commentary. I mean, you could argue they were better than Paul Heyman, or better than Jerry Lawler and JR. And they had a monumental run in the Attitude Era, but JR and Paul Heyman are just something special together. I hope that someday we still get to hear them together. I don't know how that's even possible. They're on such opposite ends of the spectrum, doing totally different things. But the commentary together was great. I love Paul Heyman on a commentary desk. And if he ever decides to step away from the managerial role or advocate role, I would absolutely push him into or encourage him to go into an announcing role. I mean, while he could do many other things, it's just so damn good, isn't he? I think we underappreciate how good Paul Heyman is as an announcer. And particularly when you have the best of all time on the other side with Jim Ross, certainly doesn't hurt. So that's the pay-per-view. I mean, like that is the end of the Alliance and Team WWF program. From there, it just kind of morphed into whoever WWF wants to hire, they will. Offer a contract to, they will. And I believe Stone Cold was able to stay on because he was the WWF champion, maybe? I'm trying to figure out how that happened or why, but those are one of those things that you know WWF is not going to care about the details about, and apparently I didn't either because I don't remember how that all panned out. And half of, or not half, the majority of the people that were supposed to get fired actually stayed on. So, you know, again, those details that WWF just continues to not care about, they clearly didn't care about back then either. But the story was so good. The guys in the ring were all stars, legends, Mount Rushmore of wrestling type guys. So I remember watching the pay-per-view, and I watched this match back today, and I really got back into it, and it made you long for those days. And it was one of those that brought you back to a time of wanting more, leaving the pro, watching Raw, watching SmackDown, and feeling like you didn't get enough. And while that may not be smart to some on the surface, I'd rather be left wanting more than be left going, oh, thank God that's over. And a lot of times that's the way we feel with today's product. As talented as the guys are today, and you could argue they are more athletic. I don't even think that's even an argument. I think that's just a fact. The guys are more athletic, but here's the thing. Athleticism is not the end-all be-all in pro wrestling. You know, I know that today's product has morphed into a very athletic presentation, one that I think is too quick, and the guys need to slow down, and everyone's doing suicide dives. I don't understand today's quota that both WWE and AEW are guilty of just seemingly having this quota of suicide dives per show. I don't understand the need for suicide dives, and particularly when you have many guys doing that move and super kicks as well. Super kicks should be reserved for a finish. I don't care if you know someone beyond Shawn Michaels takes it. Dolph Ziggler did and used it as a finish. I know he has a zigzag, but I think more people have kicked out of that than clotheslines have been delivered in pro wrestling. But I just don't like finishes being used now as transition moves. And suicide dives are just so overused. And people diving over the top rope is just, it's overdone in today's product. I don't understand the need for the constant use of those moves. I just don't. And that's industry-wide. That's not just a WWF or, WWE. Boy, I'm in the 2001 mode right now. The WWE-specific style of wrestling. It's an industry-wide 2020 wrestling presentation problem. That there are just certain moves that are constantly used, that were used as finishes, that are now used as transition, or not even transition. It's just like another punch or another kick or another clothesline. There were times when a clothesline was actually used as a finish. Think about that. There was a time where a suplex was used as a finish. What happened? Did the guys get tougher as time went on? I don't think so. I would argue that the guys back then were tougher than the guys today in some aspects. So it's just today's, I think it's a combination of today's very impatient, very have to have it now, and what's next type of mentality that we have as a society that is contributing a lot to this. And while I don't hate today's pro wrestling style, it's just so, it's very saturated with the same types of matches where everyone has to do these crazy moonsaults and splashes and suicide dives. And it's, I think, gone too far to the athletic part of the spectrum. And there's not enough balance of psychology and selling. And it's very heavily focused and skewed towards athleticism and more of a Cirque du Soleil type of presentation than being portrayed as a simulated combat sport. And that's the part that's missing. The heart and soul is what's missing from today's product. You have the great superficial part, and trust me, athleticism is needed to some degree. Not everybody has to have the same level of athleticism, or nor show that level of athleticism in every single match. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. And today's heart and soul of what makes wrestling great, which is believability, emotional connection, emotional investment, I should say, and in-ring psychology and selling, is what is crippling today's product to a degree. And I know many of you are like, what are you talking about? Today's great. Look at these five-star matches. Look at these. The problem is the definition of a five-star match is solely based around how many spots and kickouts people do and crazy stuff, instead of getting into the soul of what makes wrestling great, and that is personal rivalries, emotional investment, not superficial athletic type of, that's how we define a five-star great match is, look at these great moves and great counters. And that is, to me, that has been blown up and magnified to a point that is overshadowing what wrestling is about. It has overshadowed what wrestling, what made it great. And that is our great characters, deep characters, people that cut great promos without feeling like they're cutting promos and being themselves turned up to 12. And personal rivalries, championships that people fight for that earn those championship matches, not just because they attack a champion and automatically get a match, which is how WWE has been presenting its product for decades. This isn't a 2020, 2010, 2015 problem. This has been going on since as long as I've been watching wrestling. Again, the only thing you have to do is attack a champion and you immediately get a championship match. That's how you get rewarded. It's backward psychology. But my point is that the lack of selling is killing the emotional investment. And what's taking over is the superficial part, the athleticism that is being held to a standard that should not be as high as it is to make what wrestling is, if that makes sense. At least that's my opinion. I know that things change. Wrestling evolves. What the fans want evolve. I get it. It certainly does. What we saw back in the 80s would have never flown today. Things do need to evolve. I'm all for evolution. No pun intended. But just because something's evolving doesn't mean that it's progressing. Evolution doesn't mean it's progressing in the right direction. Just because something is changing doesn't mean that change automatically says it's for the better. People look at change and progression as, well, any progression's good, any evolution's good. No. No, it's not. So that's my view on today's product. I will always be a fan. But when you look back at these matches from 2001, 99, you know, even in the Ruthless Aggression era, guys weren't going 500 miles an hour. Yeah, you had the cruiserweight division. And that was a nice niche group. It was nice. It was a nice change of pace, right? They were more high flying, and that's wonderful. The X division, right? A lot of this stuff was very niche or niche. I don't like the way that pronunciation. And that's probably the right way, but I feel like a douchebag saying it niche. So it's a niche. How about that? And not niche, but niche. Niche group. Niche audience. So that was something back then that it was very, very small. It was a very small segment of the program. And oftentimes the cruiserweight division was forgotten about. But you had five-star matches that you look back and go, that was an awesome, that was my favorite match. And I can bet you if it was from the time frame of 97 to 2010, it was not the definition of what some people view five-star matches as today. Why? Because I guarantee that the people in those that match were solid all-star characters. They had a believable storyline. Very defined heel and babyface. And you cared about the outcome. And the wrestlers could sell their asses off. Of which the selling is just out the window today. I mean, what makes it kind of compounds itself today. Because you have today's product as this high-flying, oh my God, that's amazing. Look at these. Oh my God, look at the, look, you know, these 450 splashes. Look at how many suicide dives he did. Look at that, you know, triple axel moonsault. All this crazy crap, right? Yet, the faster that goes and the more that's integrated, the more it lends itself to less selling. Because the pace is sped up, so you don't have time to sell. It's a vicious circle. So you got to do more to distract from the selling or the lack of that thereof, right? It's just a vicious circle that feeds on itself of how do we outdo the moves? It's not about the moves. It's the intent behind the moves. It's the meaning behind them. Why are you doing them? Let me see the pain on that man's face. And it's just, next, what's next? What's next? Super kick, a kick out. What's next? No sign of any kind of struggle or pain. It's just kind of registering but not selling. Like, I'll acknowledge that I got hit and I'll get knocked down, but there's no agony in the face. There's no time to absorb what's going on. Everything is just being shoveled in your down your throat so fast you don't have time to taste it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just speaking to myself and maybe I'm just, you know, talking in the wind here. But does anybody else feel this way? It's not that I hate today's product. I don't hate it. It's just not my cup of tea when it comes to emotional investment. That's not how you emotionally get me emotionally invested anyway. Maybe some of you do, or maybe some of you don't care, and all you want to see is just this Cirque du Soleil. Nah, I don't care about the selling. Just show me cool moves. It's very superficial to me. It's very superficial, and it covers or tries to cover the lack of a good story. Because I think creative looks at this and goes, oh, these two will have a great match together. And, you know, we don't need to have a solid backstory because they'll put on a great match. It's not necessarily about putting on a great match. Chemistry is important. You know, moves are important. But what's more important is why these two men are fighting. What are they fighting for? Let me see the men struggle. Let me see and feel the moves. Give me time to digest what's happening. And instead, it's just 95% about the moves. That's how we define a match. And I appreciate that athleticism. I think I respect the hell out of it. But to me, what makes pro wrestling great is not simply and solely athleticism. So that's my thought. I didn't think I'd get on that tangent, but I did cover Survivor Series. So those of you that thought I would go off on some other tangent and not cover what I told you I would, I did. And I gave you guys a build up to that pay-per-view, at least a very high level one. And I hope you enjoyed it because these are great shows. I mean, let's be honest. Now I'm not saying I'm great at this. I'm saying that looking at these past shows is a great way to connect with other wrestling fans. And I just... looking back at those years are also a great way to escape, especially in today's crazy environment of what's going on in the world. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this show. I know I always do every time I do these nostalgia shows. They're a great way to escape the mind and get lost into whatever world you love. And I would think that world is pro wrestling if you're listening to this show. So thank you guys so much for listening. But before you go, don't forget, if you have a moment, subscribe to me on Apple Podcasts or Google or anywhere that you can and give me a rating and review. If you have a moment, if you don't, no problem. Tell a friend about the show if you like it. I also have a Facebook page that has a couple thousand likes. We're climbing in the rankings there as well. It's just facebook.com/theWWEpodcast. So pretty consistent across the board. And you know, I post up there whenever you do a new show and you can talk with amongst other wrestling fans. So that's something that I've been working on over the last couple months as well. And also follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. And also don't forget, we are nowhere near done this week. Tomorrow, comes your NXT review. And then either tomorrow or Friday comes AEW. Sometimes I release them on the same day. Sometimes I spread them out. But AEW and NXT reviews coming your way in the next couple of days. And then Ashley's going to be back with me this weekend to look at the weekend review. So still three shows to go, and it's already Wednesday. But expect a lot more. As I said, WrestleMania week is going to ramp up. Maybe we'll do a review show for each night of WrestleMania. And then do a mega review show with several co-hosts and definite audio from you guys, which, by the way, if you want to get your audio on the show, you want your question on this show, you want to rant about something, you want your just whatever you want to talk about wrestling related, send it to realwwepodcast@gmail.com, because that is how I can get you on this show. I import your video or your audio message into the show, and then I answer it live on the show. So I know some of you have taken advantage of that, but if you don't know how to do it, all you have to do is basically just create a voice memo in your phone and then send it to my email, and I get it in the show. It's very, very simple. Anybody with a smartphone can do it. It's very easy. Just go, like, check out the Voice Memos app on your phone. I mean, even if you don't have an iPhone, there's a Voice Memos app. I can pretty much guarantee that. All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed the show. I know that sometimes these run long and I repeat myself. So without doing any of that, I'm going to hit the bricks, as they say. I hope everybody is enjoying their night, morning, evening, noontime. I don't know, whatever time you're listening to this, that you're, you know, staying safe, you're staying sane, probably binging on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime or whatever video streaming service you're on. Maybe the WWE Network, for all I know. And maybe you can binge on this podcast as well. I mean, we got hundreds and hundreds of shows. And I hope you guys take advantage of our library of shows. And if you want a completely ad-free experience of that library, you just head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast. You also get a shout out on the show. You can get on the show and have your own podcast by yourself with me. I mean, lots of other great perks. So it starts at $1 a month for that. And I encourage you to check it out. Alrighty. Well, with all that being said, thank you so much for listening. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.